the gravity, and he has framed it in the historical context. I know that you said you're not going to detail private conversations, but can you give us a little bit more of an explanation as to why not? Doesn't the American public, given the historical gravity of that decision, don't they deserve to know who was advising the president, who was on the other side of that argument about leaving troops in Afghanistan?
What a great question. And it was put to Jen Psaki there in the press room today. And if my ears are not contradicting me here, that's our very good friend from Real Clear Politics, Philip Wegman, who's on the line with me right now. Philip, was that, in fact, you grilling Ms. Psaki today?
Yeah, that was me. And the reason I asked the question is that at the beginning of the briefing, you had ABC News correspondent Terry Moran, who pushed Psaki to explain who it was who said that it would be okay to leave without leaving a residual force of 25,000 American soldiers in Afghanistan. And she said that she wasn't going to detail any conversation, that they were private conversations, and that that was that, right? The reason why this is significant is that on the Hill today, you had Generals Milley and McKenzie, who told lawmakers they were of the opinion that the United States should have left 2,500 troops. Well, the president, back in August, told George Stephanopoulos that no one told him that troops should be left, and then he sort of he seemed to correct a bit and said that there was a split. Well, if in fact there was a split, who were the people telling the president that he didn't need to leave a residual force behind? So far, the White House will not answer.
When you talk out of both sides of your mouth, don't you start to contradict yourself at some point down the road a little bit? Because then later on, didn't the president actually say, when somebody put a name to it and say, didn't General so-and-so tell you that they didn't think you should do a full pullout and you should leave somebody there? And the president actually said, I'm not quoting, but I'm assimilating here, that he said something to the effect of, I don't recall that being part of the conversation.
Yeah. If you look at the ABC News transcript, he sort of leaves himself some wiggle room when he says that there was a split. And then he also says that there was no one that he could recall telling him to leave troops.
Well, then how did he remember there was a split?
Yeah, exactly. So the issue here, I've been talking to congressional aides who are following this very closely, and we know who was on one side of the argument. We know that the McKenzie and Milley said, leave troops.
Right.
Who told him not to leave troops? And obviously, the White House, they're not gonna tell us who said that. But when I asked Psaki, why? Well, why aren't you telling us? The president has, said that he appreciates that his generals are being transparent on Capitol Hill.
He doesn't.
he has gone to great lengths to sort of explain the reason why he left. And Psaki told me. She said, straight up, quote, what the American public can know and understand is that Biden will always, quote, welcome and take and ask for and push for a range of options. But, she added, we are not going to detail those types of discussions, private decisions that happen in the Situation Room for the public. So to boil this all down, what this boils down to is President Biden says that the buck stops with him. At the same time, President Biden said that there were people who told him that he could withdraw from Afghanistan without leaving a residual force, but he won't tell us who those people are. And the White House's answer is the American people should just trust us, and we're not going to give more details.
Yeah, please forgive me if that's not the first line of defense I go to. These are the same people that said there would be no tax increases that would affect anybody under $400,000 a year. So when she said that, did you find yourself, she's not going to stand up there and gush out a bunch of names for you, but with, she just has this condescending attitude sometimes, doesn't she?
Oh, I don't know. I think I, I think I appreciate Psaki. Certainly, you know, she walks into that briefing room knowing that she is going to get quite a few questions. Certainly, the press have gotten more aggressive on the issue of Afghanistan.
From both sides.
On both sides. And certainly, you know, there was a de-escalation between the press secretary and the press with the changing of administrations. But, yeah, I appreciate that that Psaki is willing to come to reporters who are going to ask her, you know, tougher, more difficult questions than what she's generally used to. And, hey, if she wants to, you know, put some mustard on her fastball, I'm fine with that because I'm just there to get the quote. I'm not part of the story.
Everybody in the press room, are they still wearing masks?
Yeah, we're all still wearing masks. Reason being is because of D.C. Mayor Mariel Bowser's order, given that because there's been an increase in the number of Delta variant cases here, even though vaccination rates are up, she's mandated masks, and then the White House and the White House Correspondents Association.
Now, do the masks allow you to have a full press room, or is it still not full?
It's a full press room. It's a full press room. All of those 49 seats are filled, and then some of my colleagues who don't have an assigned seat, they are standing in the aisles. I got to say, though, that the mask is a little bit of a hindrance because you're trying not to mumble. You're trying to, you know, get your question across, and it kind of muffles your voice.
But, yeah. So in that the press room is full and there are more people to choose from, was calling on you today in the press room, was that a pre-decision, or was it just your rotation, or she happened to look your way and she felt sorry for you because she hadn't called on you in a while?
Well, so it's interesting. I'm not certain what the strategy is in terms of which reporters get called on and which reporters don't. I know that if you are sort of asking a pretty aggressive question just for the sake of being aggressive, if you are trying to be sort of a Jim Acosta accosting a liberal administration this time, they're probably going to tire of that pretty quickly. But if you're being aggressive because you're asking a question that they know has merit, then I think that they will come to you. And yeah, Psaki, you know, I had a dry spell there for, you know, about a week, but yeah, she's unafraid to take questions, and you just have to be willing to know that she's going to be aggressive, as aggressive as the question that you ask her.
Did you have any foreknowledge she was going to call on you today?
No, so, it's one of those things where you just have to, you know, be ready. The administration, they're having a daily press briefing. The Trump administration did not do that. Kayleigh sort of brought it back a little bit, but there's a daily briefing now. And so you have to be ready with a list of questions that, you know, relate to stories you're already working on. And then you have to be ready to roll with the punches and ask a follow-up question if, you know, the press secretary sort of ducked out of a earlier answer.
Do you come into the press? This is all nuts and bolts here, and people may not want to hear all this. I love this. These are questions you and I never get to talk about. When you go into the press briefing, do you have three or four questions ready? Do you sometimes decide which question you're going to ask based on what the flow of the question has been in the room up to the point that she calls on you?
Absolutely. I mean, so we sit in the fourth row at the White House, and that means that the networks, CNN, Fox, ABC, CBS, they're going to get the first crack. And they are the guys who sit in the front row. Peter Ducey or Jackie Heinrich of Fox, they are always going to get a question.
Has she ever called on you thinking she was calling on Peter Ducey? I mean, has that ever happened? Especially since you've got masks on.
I'm a little bit farther back. Yeah. So those networks, those guys are not only going to get a question, they're usually going to get three or four.
Yeah.
And then after them, that's where the New York Times, the Washington Post, and some of the wire services like the Associated Press or Reuters sit. Those guys generally get one or two questions as well. So by the time it gets to me in the fourth row, some of the bigger picture questions have already been asked. And so, you know, you have to prepare for the news of the day, but try and find an angle that hasn't been attacked yet.
Well, the question you asked today, though, I mean, you might not have gotten first crack, but it was very apropos for what was happening up on the Hill.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, sometimes, you know, the press corps sort of rallies together and pushes the administration to answer a question. Sometimes it's just an individual reporter. But, yeah, by the time she gets to me in the fourth row today, I got the last question, and you sort of have to be able to either follow up on the big question or have, you know, one or two or three other ones. But, yeah, when you get a chance, you try to be as quick as you can and to pack as much as you can into the questions that you get because, yeah, she has to deal with Fox News and ABC. She can very easily skip over Real Clear Politics.
Let me go back to something serious for the last 2 minutes we've got together talking to Philip Wegman from Real Clear Politics, who looks just like Ducey from Fox. But when the president is making the statement that with what's going on here with this budget and what he wants to add, this $3.5 trillion, and he says, look, it's going to end up not costing anything. We're going to raise revenue, but it's not going to cost anything. The 400,000 threshold is still there. And then when Jen Psaki said the other day in the press room, this reconciliation package would cost $0. I mean, come on.
Well, this kind of reminds me of what Republican administrations like to do. They like to say tax cuts will pay for themselves. And that's true in a sense that growth will increase when more people have more money in their pockets and can go out and spend and save and make big purchases. But the necessary second step is if these sort of tax cuts are going to, you know, not send the federal government into, you know, debt and deficit, is that the federal government has to tighten its own belt. And that never happens. Both Republicans and Democrats are loath.
No argument there. Spending. Yeah, no argument there. Yep.
But the issue here is the Biden administration is being very selective in the way that they are saying it's going to cost $0. Mm-hmm. They say it's not going to add to debt and deficit because they're just going to tax business and the wealthy. And they are not taking that into consideration when they say that it's going to cost $0.
Philip, always appreciate having you on. Thanks for being in the room. When I heard your voice earlier, because I actually had Jim Psaki up on my volume on my TV a while ago, and I'm like, wait a minute, I know that voice asking that question. I think that's Peter Ducey. No. But I appreciate having you on, my friend. He's with us at this time every Tuesday. Hey, Philip, thanks so much.
Hey, anytime. Thanks, Pat.
Podcasts by Federated Media.